The new issue of Discover Magazine hits newsstands tomorrow. One of the editors is with us now to give a preview of some of the top stories in this month's issue.
Our guest is Gemma Tarlak. She's a senior associate editor at Discover Magazine based in Waukesha. Gemma, welcome back.
Hi, great to be with you guys again.
So a lot of cool stuff in this issue that we have to discuss today. One cool thing coming up has to do with a new way to discover lost cities, LIDAR. Am I pronouncing that right?
Yeah, actually. And, you know, I love that word because it makes me think of something Dr. Evil would have, you know, sharks that shoot LIDAR. But it's short for light detection and ranging. And it is a laser scanning technology that it's been used a little bit in Mesoamerica. But for the first time, they used it at Angkor, the site in Cambodia that we all recognize from National Geographic and Angelina Jolie movies. It's that fantastic temple complex, and they had a helicopter just pass over the site back and forth for hours and hours and hours, and it shot out these little laser pulses. It shot out 200,000 of them per second. And when I read that statistic, my head just kind of exploded. But so it shot these laser pulses down into the dense jungle, and the pulses were able to penetrate the vegetation and actually give them the most accurate, detailed topography of what's beneath all the vegetation. And they found the size of the city and the organization, the complexity, is far greater than they thought. Just an easy statistic to bring it home. It's got a suburban area three times the size of Atlanta.
Wow.
I mean, if you've ever been stuck on a freeway in Atlanta, you know that's pretty impressive. And this is all back in the 12th century. It's pretty amazing.
And right now, or up till now, it was as if, you know, you had a picture of Madison in the future. All you had was the state capitol and the Capitol Square, and that's all you knew about the town. That's kind of the exponential scale this expands our understanding, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And they really have a much better appreciation for the degree of organization. I mean, they had planning to avoid flooding the homes. They had these special ponds built in the same alignment that they could tell this was planned. This wasn't just, you know, a guy in the backyard saying, hey, my neighbor's house never gets flooded. I'll do what he's doing. So they really show just the incredible amount of organization that was, you know, part of this capital city of the Lost Khmer Empire.
What did the images coming back look like after these laser pulses are sent down?
Well, they do a variety of different treatments of the data that comes back in, and some of them are these gorgeous, multicolored, kind of three-dimensional maps. Others are just sort of black and white, very stark, almost schematic-looking. But they can manipulate the data that comes in all different ways. They can separate, say, modern roads from evidence of medieval roads and just give it all different kinds of treatment to develop a better understanding, not only of what was there, but when it was built. They're actually able to tell from the laser scanning technology kind of the rough chronology of when things appeared.
This really changes my image of how archaeology will be done, from the cinematic version of Lara Croft or Indiana Jones hacking their way through the jungle with machetes and swinging over traps, or the real way, which is probably grad students with machetes painstakingly dusting off pottery shards. And this really changes archaeology, doesn't it?
You know, it does. And I have a few friends who are archaeologists, and none of them own fedoras. But they're all field people, you know, and I can see this really kind of revolutionizing their field, but in a good way. Mm-hmm. You know, I think there will always be the option to, you know, put on the khaki shorts and the hiking boots and go out into the jungle. But now when you're going out into the jungle, you have such a better roadmap. I mean, before, really, the only way to determine the contours of the city, the lost city, was to kind of go out there with the machete. Now you can have your data points. You can, you know, reference that on that battery-powered tablet you've got in your hand, and boom, you're probably able to get much more research done in a single field season, much more accurate, too, than ever before.
But they're not done once they take those LIDAR images. Then they can go to the ground and know exactly where to start digging.
Exactly, exactly.
Well, let's move on to one of the other features in this month's magazine, this one about Matt Lewin, an expedition physician. First of all, let's talk about what exactly is an expedition physician.
Well, speaking of fedoras,
he's got a real one.
Yeah, right. Well, actually, I have to say he's kind of my hero. He's had an amazing career. He started out kind of as an amateur paleontologist, but decided he wanted to be this doctor who had exotic adventures, and he made it happen. He went to medical medical school, got a PhD, also practiced in an emergency room for a while, decided it wasn't for him. And I have to say the writer, Eric Vance, did an amazing job kind of conveying the emotional battle that Matt Lewin experienced when he decided ER medicine wasn't for him. But he got involved in basically expedition medicine. Doctors in very remote places, they don't have access to most of the tools that doctors in Milwaukee or Madison would have. And so they've got to deal with emergencies, whether it's an outbreak of an unknown illness, someone getting their leg crushed by a fossil falling on it, that was something Matt had to deal with, or even someone choking. You know, one of the most vivid images in the story to me was a new use for a safety pin. With a choking victim, you can pin their tongue to their cheek with a safety pin to keep them from choking.
Wow.
I
think you want to be a doctor to try that.
Yeah, wow. Let's all think about that mental image for a while.
Well, it changed the way, again, we think about how science is done. Because when I think of science work, an image of a lab pops into my head. But
right. There
are people out in really remote places around the world doing primatology, geology, astronomy, you name it, far from a hospital.
Right, and not only that, but a lot of the folks on these expeditions, you know, they're dealing with jackhammers. They're dealing with heavy equipment. They've got to move fossils that maybe, you know, they may weigh hundreds of pounds. And again, if you drop it, if you're in a mudslide situation, say, some of these jungle situations are you know, not exactly safe to begin with, you can be bitten by any number of things or contract any number of diseases. So it's really incredible what they do, what these expedition doctors do with the barest of essentials.
And it's kind of fascinating to see what he puts in his must-have survival kit. It's not all stuff I would think you would want. You mentioned the safety pins, but you know, he always brings sugar along with him for another.
Yeah, that one fascinated me. He brings it along just because, you know, you can't be sure that a diabetic, say, is going to remember to bring a source of sugar, you know, to help them. And he also cleans wounds with it. I mean,
really?
He also talks about using honey as a dressing, which actually they did that in antiquity. I know the Roman army used honey as a wound dressing, but he's experimenting with ways of making it even more efficacious.
So one more story we have to talk about today, a new documentary about the finding of the Higgs boson particle, particle fever. What did you learn about the successful search ultimately for the Higgs boson?
Well, I was able to talk to David Kaplan, who is a physicist and also the producer and kind of the brainchild of this movie. And, you know, he said it best. He was in the middle of all the preparation for the opening of the Large Hadron Collider outside Geneva, and he realized we are making history here. So he, at first, took his camera and started filming all these little moments and incidents during the build-up to the opening of the facility. Then he realized he wasn't such a great filmmaker, so he got a professional team to do the filming and the editing and everything. Really some stellar, got some Oscar winners on board in the crew. And they captured, you know, we all know the science, the Higgs boson, why it's important, why, you know, how it was discovered, what it means, et cetera. But they really captured the human side of what's going on. You know, I think a lot of times we hear about these huge scientific discoveries, and it's just science, you know, it's a bunch of numbers, it's a bunch of data. We don't think about the guy who comes home at night to his family and is tucking his kids into bed, and this really puts a human face on it. I mean, they fight, they argue, they, you know, they have hopes and dreams, and it's wonderful. It follows about half dozen physicists from all different disciplines within the field, all different ages, all different stages of their career, and it follows them through the buildup to firing up the Large Hadron Collider, and then actually finding the Higgs boson, confirming the data. And you really feel like you're there and see just a really fascinating side that I think a lot of times you don't see when we're talking about particle physics.
And, Jem, in our last 20 seconds here, there's still a lot we don't know about the Higgs, right?
That's right, yeah. And that kind of ends on a cliffhanger, all these tantalizing possibilities, but maybe that'll be in the sequel.
Well, we can watch for that. Jemma, thanks a lot for joining us again.
Always a pleasure. Thank you.
That was Jemma Tarlak, Senior Associate Editor at Discover Magazine. They're based in Waukesha. She joins us each month to bring us some of the coolest stories from the world of science.